Buenas. Jenny literally just opened the door to look at me and start talking. I'm like, there's not a worse time.
Did you give her the I'm on a podcast look?
I tried, and then she just started mouthing things, and I'm like, I can't. I'm not good at this game. I'm really bad at this.
So. Just,
but not, she just like very slowly closed it, and now it keeps going back and forth. I don't know what to do now. She just goes, podcast? And I'm like, yeah. Like I told you right before we were doing this. Anyway, I had something I wanted to talk to you about. I'm a little scared because this really, it's the running joke now that we're the Ever Bros, and it was supposed to be the ironic thing. And then I keep saying bro things and you keep saying bro things and we're bros. But I'm going to keep it going anyway, cause that's funny. You said something the other day that I was just so impressed.
Oh,
not about you. Oh. Something that you have. You said your beard trimmer, you've had it since, what was it, 2017?
I think I said that. Yeah. Yep. 2017. Yeah.
Okay. Before that, how long was that your first one? How long? It can't be your first one. How long? I have this issue with planned obsolescence. Okay. My beard trimmer broke. That's how this starts.
Hold on. Say that again. Planned what?
Planned obsolescence.
Oh, is that how you say it? I always say obsolescence.
Obsolescence?
Is it obsolescence? Am I stupid?
I could be wrong. I thought it was obsolescence, but
I spelled it wrong in Google, but we're going to find out here. See more. Pronounce it, Google. How do you pronunciation? Oh, there it is. There's a button for it. Okay.
Obsolescence. Well,
you're right. Obsolescence.
Okay.
All right. Whatever.
So my beard trimmer broke. Mm-hmm. And you've had yours longer. And what's up with that? Why is mine broke and I had to get a new one? And this, it's not the first time. And yeah. I think that they make beard trimmers like this. And I don't know if you actually, you know, get better by paying more, so that it's less planned to die into the future, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you pay another $50, that it's going to last another year or something. And I know this is a little like, I only half believe these things because I feel like it's very magical to think this way, but you can't not consider it, because if it worked forever, then those companies would just not have to sell new ones because they would be banking on people forgetting them while traveling or something like that.
Well, that's how the old days used to be.
Yeah.
That's why fridges from the 50s still work.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So let me ask you this. Do you think my beard trimmer really has a lot of work to do?
I had not thought about that. That wasn't even a single thought in my mind.
In fact, I didn't have one before 2017.
Oh, just because you didn't need it?
I didn't need one.
Mm. So you've only ever had, you had one beard trimmer and you still got it. And it's just a great life.
Yeah.
This hasn't been a problem for you ever.
Yeah. Cause I'm quarter Asian. So I'm quarter Asian. And just to get to the point where like, I like look scruffy. That takes usually about 2 weeks. So I shaved when I went to Jamaica. I shaved about 3 days before I left for Jamaica. When I got back, because I was there for 7 days, when I got back, I had 3 days of no shaving, and then I decided to shave it. But it wasn't even like bad. It was just kind of like, oh, it's kind of long. So yeah, it takes a long time, and it's not very thick. It's also like half blonde and half brown. So. Mm. It looks kind of patchy, even though it's not as patchy as you think it is. But yeah, before 2017, it was all just like very thin hair. And so it didn't matter how long it got. I could just use like a disposable razor.
Okay. I'm not going to discredit that because I think you have a very valid point, but I do want to,
let me ask you this.
How much did you pay for it?
Probably $40. $40, $50.
This isn't fair at all. I was thinking like we could rationalize this with, you paid more and it's a really nice one and that's why it's still alive.
Well, but, Andes. A-N-D-I-S.
That's a good brand. I hear
cord, trimmer.
And it's corded, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's just like one of the $40, $50 models. I was going to go all out because I'm like, I'm not like doing hardcore like manscaping. Like I'm shaving off this extended peach fuzz.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I did pay like $80 for my cat. My cat has the same brand, but it's like it's a little more hardcore because he gets poop in his fur. And so, and he gets like really hardcore mat. So I've got to really shave him, but it has a paw. I showed you it has a paw print on it, like on it. So I know the difference between his and mine. But let me ask you this too. Like how often do you take your beard trimmer apart with tools and clean it?
Like every time.
Every time?
Yeah.
Okay. You should feel bad about your beard trimmer then, because I do it once every like 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, no, every time. Every time. And I... So
like you take a screwdriver and you take the whole guard off and everything?
I don't need it. Well, I don't need a screwdriver. It just like pops off. I don't know. And then I can clean it out. So I do that.
It pops off?
Yeah.
Oh, mine doesn't. Yeah, my whole like blade and everything is like metal. Like obviously the blade is metal, but like the plate that attaches to the blade and then where the blade attached to is all metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I bought, this is an experiment in that I spent $90 on one. And I'm going to see if it's better.
If I was a man, I would have to invest more in my beard trimmer too.
So you're going with the premise of mine is more, I have more of a beard to deal with. So it is more demanding.
Yeah, absolutely. You wouldn't use a lawnmower to, you know, cut down like a field, like a wheat field, like got to use the right tool.
Okay.
You're a very hairy guy. Like you get pretty hairy.
Yeah. It's out of control. Yeah. It sucks.
I don't get hairy at all. I have no chest hair. I have no back hair. I got nothing until you get to my legs and it's just a forest.
I'm jealous. It's annoying. It's a real pain. Anyway, I did want it. That was all I had. I wanted to talk about it and really just give people more of the bro vibe, which is what we're sort of talking
about. Yeah, why don't
about?
We just talk about bros for the next 45 minutes? So in this episode, the original title, I don't know if we're going to keep it, but the original title is Calling Out Bad Business Bros. And so we see a lot. I mean, it's like it's kind of like it's another way to say like call someone a guru, because they think they know their trade very well and they can provide that service for somebody, but they have no idea how to operate a business based off of it. And there are other aspects to that too. Like they'll flex or, tell people how they should run their business, but then you see them doing things that we're going to mention here, like asking somebody to close their first client for them because they can't. So I think it'd just be better just to start off with lists. I don't know if you wanted to open it a different way, but I didn't have very good.
I just wanted to jump in and say, let's talk about women too, right? Let's not make this a complete bashing on some bros. But so like maybe let's start
it's like
there.
90% of them.
I was going to say it didn't even come up as an idea because it just isn't a common thing that I see or run into or experience. I think if anything, what I see in here when I talk to the women who are running agencies, wanting to start their own agencies, that sort of thing, usually wanting to start, right? Because that's the target group from our podcast in a lot of ways. And it's a lack of confidence is what I see there. And it's not even necessarily a gender thing. It's just a trend of the combo. Whereas the guys are a lot arguably overconfident. But usually the women are very smart and they have very well thought out detailed, things to say. And then I read them and I think, yeah, you're already smarter than me. Right? You have everything. You've thought it all out. You've done the whole process. All you need to do is do the scary part now.
It's like when we had the two episode flow there where we answered Teresa's questions. She's asking questions that like we didn't even ask ourselves until like 2 or 3 years in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. she seemed very smart, very bright, more than capable of doing whatever it is that she decides to do. And she is not alone with that trend either. So I think that's the bigger trend that I see with women is that, is I just want to say, you teach me. How about that? You like, there's,
what should I be
everything
thinking
that
about?
You're saying, yeah, from everything that you're saying, you seem like you have the idea down and you just have to take a jump, which is the opposite of the trend that we see with guys, which is that they're jumping and not thinking things through or doing much self-reflection at all. So, okay, well, let's just start there with the list. I said, and I want to ask you, how often do you get guys saying or calling you bro?
Me?
Yeah.
Not often. Well, I mean, which medium? Like Facebook messages? Because I get tons of solicitors that are like, hey, bro.
Well, that's quite literally my second point. But yeah, so you're saying they call you bro there.
Yeah, like when they're trying to solicit to me or like trying to like, you know, be buddy-buddy.
Mm-hmm. And there's a time and place where it can be okay, but it's usually not at the beginning. even that's debatable, right? I mean, you gotta, okay, I'm gonna skip straight to the second one, which is being too casual in a casual communication channel. So this is happening more and more with the internet where you meet people in places and settings that are naturally more casual, right? Maybe you're talking on Facebook, you met in a Discord, what was it called? It's on a Discord server. Mm-hmm. You're on Reddit, that sort of thing. And I think if anything, you need to be more careful when you meet in those places that you don't give across the wrong impression, because you're already by meeting there, you've delegitimized part of the business process, and you need to come back and say, no, I am serious. I do take this seriously. I'm not some random person on the internet who's a wantrepreneur, right? I'm actually, and even if you are, just saying that, so having the self-awareness to say, I understand that right now I am a bit of a wantrepreneur and I need help making the transition or something. That's better than coming from those places and being like, hey, bro, what's up? You know, look at my awesome business. Look how amazing I am. It's not a good look.
I think so while you were saying this, I pulled up in my, you know, the messages in Facebook that go to like the spam, mm-hmm. because your primary method of reaching out to people is literally just spamming Facebook messages from people who are also in agency groups. And I saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 messages. So I've got like hundreds in here, but like 5 messages down literally starts out, hey, bro, I found you on the SMMA list of Joel Kaplan, and I'm very confused how I would come up with an offer for my niche. So he's like an actual listener. So it doesn't sound like he's soliciting to me, but like, I didn't realize that was your bro already. But that's just the one example. I get a lot of solicitors that actually say, hey, bro.
And we're aware. That was the joke, right? We've said it before. The irony is not lost on us. We call ourselves the Ever Bros, right? But if you listen at all, I hope that you come to understand relatively quickly that we are very serious about this and take this seriously and professionalism.
I don't think this guy is a listener. I think he just saw one of my comments on something. Someone said, okay. Cause someone asked if I can remember correctly, they were like, how much, what was it? Oh, what should I spend? It was like, what should I spend on, for like, oh, if you're new, is paying for ads a good way to get clients? Mm-hmm. And obviously our stance is no. We just had an episode on this not too long ago.
Right.
And so I had commented about it. I'm like, no, that's stupid. Don't do that. Anybody who says yes is trying to sell you something.
Yeah, probably.
And of course I had the most likes and engagement, and it was accurate. Nobody who was saying yes wasn't selling something, so nobody wanted to comment on me because I would just be like, well, are you selling something? but sorry, were you saying something?
No, that was it. That combo, I think, is a big one that I see, though, is the unironic use of bro, right? Yeah. And then also just
informality.
Mm-hmm, informal and not being self-aware with the way in which you're communicating. I just had this. I was on Craigslist, right? So I was doing a Craigslist deal, and
this already sounds shady,
right? Mm-hmm. So by default, you know that if you're on Craigslist, this is, you know, you have to have built-in protections to legitimize things because Craigslist is sketchy. And we had a couple of correspondence back and forth, and I just told him at the end, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna be honest, this is sketchy, right? So if you're serious about this, then we need to share contact information that's not just anonymous Craigslist emails. So here's mine. You share yours if you want to talk about this and show that you're serious, because the way that you're handling this is just not impressed me so far.
Mm. Yeah. And I see. Yeah. By the way, if you're in Canada, your Canadian Craigslist is Kijiji.
Kijiji?
Kijiji. Yeah.
What?
I'm pretty sure like Ezra had mentioned that to me at one point, and I was like, Kijiji. What is this? And he was like, it's like Craigslist, but in Canada.
How do you spell it?
K-I-J-I-J-I.
K-K-I?
K-I. Kijiji? K-I-J-I-J-I.
Kijiji?
Uh-huh.
Whoa. Okay.
So.
No, it's part of eBay.
Oh, is it? Okay. So I'm going to go down my list, because I think this is really applicable to a lot of people who are just starting out. And that's a flexing on prospects or in public. And by flexing on prospects or in public, I'm basically saying it doesn't matter whether you can back it up or whether you can't. So when you are bragging about your revenue or your employee count or the number of accounts you work with or how much ad spend you've spent, just like unsolicited, that is a really bad business practice, and it actually turns business owners and prospects off of you. And I know this for a fact, because I get prospects that come to me that tell me that they've talked with other quote-unquote agency owners, and they will tell me who they talked to just because they are willing to, they just want to. And they're like, yeah, I talked to this guy, but all he couldn't like stop talking about, oh, how many accounts they worked with, or, you know, how big they were, or how many employees they had. And it's honestly really embarrassing. And I know we've mentioned this before, because I can't remember when we did it. It was early on. It was like before episode 30, but I had this girl reach out to me, and she was like, I listened to your last episode, and I'm literally cringing at myself. Oh, we were talking about faking it until you make it. So like, so in this scenario, I'm explaining, like, it doesn't matter if you can back it up. So like when Cody and I say we're doing about $500,000 a year, we can back it up, but it's not unsolicited, unless, you know, somebody is like specifically asking, then it's like, okay, well, this is how big we are. And I usually only bring that up to clients, one, if they particularly ask how big we are, and two, if they're already bigger than us. And so like, I just did it recently. I think it was like yesterday. I was talking to a client or a prospect, and he was like, I was like, how big are you guys? And he was like, we do 700K. In revenue. I'm like, oh, he's like, it's like our goal is $1 million. And I was like, well, our goal is 700K this year. So, it was kind of one of those things where it's like, it's a little bit of humbling, just showing humility, just being like, our goal is to be where you're at actually. So, but if you brag about, if you do it to a prospect and you talk about how big you are, or how many employees you have, it's generally not a turn on, and it's a turn off, because what I found is a lot of prospective clients actually don't like working with large agencies. They usually pick large agencies because it's the only place they can go to and pay one invoice to get all their marketing done. And that's it. But generally, Cody and I have experience working in large agencies. And generally, your account manager is not someone who's senior. There's someone who's relatively new, probably fresh out of college. Like Cody says all the time, they're just a pretty face. And they don't actually know a lot about the, you know, campaigns and execution, and they say things wrong all the time. There's things they're the liaison between the people actually running the campaigns and doing the work, and then the client. So there's a lot of red tape, things are slow. And that's one of your benefits of being a small agency, is being small and agile and personable. And that's what I found most people are looking for. So if you're a small agency, there's no reason to fake that. In fact, you're doing yourself a disservice if you say that you have a big team or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. End speech. I just see it as being dishonest, right? Lying about the state of your business in general. Why? Right? I mean, I get why. I know that you want to be with the place that you're saying, but you don't get there by lying, and you definitely don't help yourself or do yourself any favors. So, yeah. Just be honest.
All right. Next one. You like to say this one a lot, but the next one is diversifying instead of doubling down. And so a lot of newer agency owners do this when they first start out, is they struggle to get a client offering the service that they offer. So if the service that they're offering is, if they're an SMMA and you're offering social media paid ads or even organic ads, and you can't close a client, what you or your peers will typically do is start adding more services in. Like, I'll do this in order to facilitate a wider audience. I'm going to cast a larger net. But what you should do is you should be doubling down on the thing that you like to do and the thing that works for you. Cody and I don't do Facebook, organic Facebook posting, because one of our core values is mutually profitable. And unfortunately, in the landscaping industry, organic posting is not something that drives immediate results. And it's also not very traceable in terms of like tracking acquisition. So if Cody and I were to offer that, we would have to change our product positioning. And we'd have to say, okay, we do organic Facebook posting, and the product positioning is going to be, I'm just shooting something out of my ass here, but like, it would be, we take your Facebook page work off of your hands, and we help create a good brand image. But we'd have to be upfront with clients and say, like, this isn't something that's going to generate a bunch of traffic for your business. This is something that you have been doing internally and you want to offload. And that's what we're here for. We're here to solve your problem. But we have to also find clients that fit that. Not everyone's going to fit that. Not everyone's going to fit our model. Some people want to come to us and they don't want SEO or Google ads. They want social media ads, or like they already have somebody doing their SEO, and we say, well, we package these together and we're not going to change our services just to get your revenue in the door. So there's two things really important. One is, if you want to offer a service, you have to position it in a way that sets you up for success and sets the right expectations. And two, find the right client fit for it. There's a client fit for everything. Some services might have more available clients than others. But once you do find that fit, once you do find a service, you like double down on that and become that the person for that and the agency for that.
Yeah, I think this is one of the less egregious mistakes, right? And it's just a common thing when you're starting out early to not know, right? You want to do well, so you'll do anything. You'll try anything, you'll figure anything out. And it's not a terrible place to start, especially if you don't know and you're not confident yet in where to go. But once you figure something out, if it's just you and you're small, then double down on that. Because most likely you can make it replicable, and then you can find more of the people that want that sort of thing, and you can scale up, and it'll be a lot easier than continuing to offer everything under the moon and hoping that, you can grow that way, because it's a lot more intensive to try like that.
It's not as egregious, because even big companies do make this mistake. Even they're like, they struggle with revenue growth. So the first thing they do is they add on more services. And the only reason I think you should add on more services is if you have two things. One is you have documented all of your processes and you've created a repeatable process for one service, and you become the expert in that, and you can offload that. And then you can start doing research and development on another service to start building that up and duplicate that one. The other thing is, if you've saturated the market with one service and there really is nowhere to go with it anymore, then adding something else in is totally fine. So that doesn't normally happen, especially like where you work in the landscaping and lawn care industry. So one of our things that we do is we also don't work with competitors. So if we have two lawn care landscaping businesses in the same area, we won't work with them. We'll only work with one. And it's on a first come, first serve basis. But you also have to consider like how much saturation that is. So you might think, okay, well, if we work with one landscaper, does that mean like how many per state is that going to be? And you know, if I just throw a number out there and just say like three, you know, northern, central, southern, and then you multiply that by the number of states, that's 150. That's if we're at total capacity. So if we have 150 clients at our minimum management fee, that's $75,000 a month, which isn't even $1 million. So mm-hmm. I think it's like right at the edge of $1 million. That would be our market cap if we could only take on three clients at a time. However, keep in mind, like we have a client in Pittsburgh that serves a particular suburb of Pittsburgh. I just talked to a prospect who also serves Pittsburgh. And my first thought process was, hey, I don't think we can work together because we already have somebody in that area. But turns out that their area literally stops right where the other one starts. And then it continues south. So they both serve the Pittsburgh market, but their area don't go too far out because they really big thing in lawn care industry is route density. So how dense can you get your route? The more drive time you have between projects, the less profitable you are. So the exact same thing happened literally the last 2 days. I have two leads coming to us from Indianapolis, but one of them works on the west side of Indianapolis and the other one works on the east side of Indianapolis. So our number for this number that I threw out for like three lawn care providers in each state is already off because I'm getting two, three clients in literally the same metro, just serving that one metro. And to consider there's like four or five metros in the state, and then also like the other smaller areas throughout the state. I mean, you're almost looking at a saturation of 10 clients per state. And then you look at states like California and Texas, where we have what, like five clients in Texas?
It's we insane. Are Texas. Yeah. Texas is our identity.
So, so you take like, okay, now you have 10 times 500 and then multiply that by 50. And that's 250,000 a month now. Okay. So now we're at 3 million a year. So let's say that's our saturation. Okay, so that's our saturation. Where do we go from here? Well, you sell more services now. So now we have to actually start doing research and development and getting up there. And you do reach, yeah, so this is like maximum saturation. There is like a certain level of uncomfortable saturation where you're not saturated, but you're starting to get there. And we've kind of experienced this a little bit at one point in Missouri. And like it just seemed like every form fill and every request we're getting were from competing areas. And then I remember messaging you and be like, we got to address this. Like,
yeah.
Another thing you can do is say, okay, well, instead of not working with one competitor, we'll work with two competitors in an area. And then if you do that, okay, that doubles your $3 million market cap to $2 or $6 million. And then the next thing, getting on a tangent, but the next thing is like, okay, well, once we hit that saturation, then we can switch to a different industry instead of lawn care. Now we can do something else.
Yep. And you have to think about how you communicate those things, how you're going to talk to clients and that sort of stuff too, about any changes that you might make. But it's just basics of how are you going to scale up and grow? And there's a right time, and it's usually not in the middle, right? If you're very early and need help, then makes sense to try and find your spot. But once you find it, I'd stay in your lane until you get to a point where it becomes a problem and you're like, oh no, it's hard to make more money now. Mm-hmm.
This is a really good like segue for not learning business in general, which is the next point. It's not the next point, but it's the next point I'm going to make. Because like what I explained to you is a very big concept of just understanding what your potential is and thinking about that and extrapolating, well, what happens if I got one client in this area? What happens if I get three? What happens if I max at the state? What happens if I max at the country? Like how big do I get before things start to become a problem? And the other aspect of just not learning business in general, which is a lot of what these gurus and bros or business bros, and what's the alternative for bro? Like what's the female version of bro? Chick? Babe? Chick. Is it babe? Like boss babe?
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't like babe though, because or chick really, because those are just things bros say.
Yeah. I think maybe the boss babe. That's the
you gotta say both though. You can't just say babe. You gotta say boss babe.
Yeah, no. Yeah, because that's the okay, hold on, let me think about this. Yeah, I think that's it. Because when I think it's not as many, but I have had a couple of those conversations. Mm-hmm. Where it's the women version of wanting to be the thing. Like the Instagram thing.
And usually what I see is bros are starting like crypto or agency or like Shopify stupid bullshit. And then like the girls, the women, like they're all in like MLMs, like Herbalife and I can't even think of all the MLMs right now. There's like a million of them. doTERRA, whatever. It works. I think they rebranded to something else. I can't remember. But
well, I think the women are more in social too, right? If they're going to build agencies, it's going to be more social media ones. That's more common. Yeah, it's not so, usually the women that are going to go into development, which is super cool if you do. But yeah.
So I had the just not learning businesses in general and not having a basic, the basics of owning a business. And some of those things some of those things are arguably cultural, like, cause I put contracts and agreements and I know like Japan isn't like that, but let's be honest.
Well, they still do them, but.
Oh, do they? Yeah. Are they just shorter?
They're like, what's the word? Representative. Like we go back and we look at the words, right? But the idea of that wasn't in the contract doesn't fly there.
Gotcha. So I've had contracts and agreements since I started Evergrow, even without Cody. I always had to have something there. And we have talked about this before, but we used Concord Now back in the day. And I believe we used it back in episode one when we talked about having a contract software. It isn't free anymore, so we don't use it anymore. And it's baked into our HubSpot subscription. So we just use that, but having that to where you can go back and you didn't have to go back on it. All you really need to do is make sure that the scope of work is defined. So our contracts aren't binding in any way. It's more of setting expectations. And then when a client complains and we go back to a client and say, your complaint is unjustified because you signed this contract and it clearly says this in here. And we had to do that recently, and I think we just mentioned in the last episode, but even then, like, it's just still kind of a cover your ass thing, because even when a client complains about it and complains about something that's their own fault and they didn't read the contract, you still have to kind of take that to heart as just like being in a good relationship with your client. So if your client complains about it, and my cat just walked in my door and he's just massive. that's who the trimmer is for.
Chunky boy.
But I made a point to my client, like, hey, yeah, you're right. I could have communicated this better and throughout the relationship and let you know that you would be put at the back of the queue for the lack of, you know, response and moving the project forward. But it is also in the agreement, so let's just move forward. The other part of that is just like having your LLC or legal shield set up regardless of where you're at. So when you're in the US, it's an LLC. Our next biggest user base is the UK. And that would be an LTD. So just making sure that you have your appropriate legal shield set up. And again, if you go back to listen to episode one, we say you don't have to. You don't have to have, at least if you're in the US, you don't have to have an LLC to start a business. But not having one is also a very dangerous game to play. And yep. Cody knows this because we are looking at our insurance and
stuff.
Yeah. And one of those things is what, like cyber, or it's what was the thing you were just telling me about this before the podcast?
Cyber and data breach.
Yes.
Security or insurance stuff to specifically cover those sorts of things.
And so one of those things in there that Cody brought up was that getting actual written sign off on ad copy for the ads that you produce to the clients, because if something were to happen to where your client is, for whatever reason, sued for trademark infringement or sued for anything, they can come after you as an agency. So, but if you have that written sign off, you have that protection with you. And part of our insurance basically says, like, you should be doing this.
Yeah, I think a lot of things matter. These things matter, especially if you're not listening to us, you're listening to other people and they're like, hey, yeah, $2K a month per client, just management, not the other things. Depending on how much you're charging your clients, I pay a lot more attention to some of this stuff because it's going to be a lot more important. If you're taking $5,000, $6,000 a month from your clients, I'd have a lot more of this stuff locked down because that's a lot harder to do in a few ways. It's harder to do on a handshake. It's especially harder to do it on a handshake if you start there. If you didn't build up and warm up to those sorts of things and build trust and a relationship with your clients so that they know you know how you like to run things and operate things and can work them out. And if you're not getting that across either, I think that's also a mistake. Mm-hmm. And just a bad practice.
I thought about this too, and it very similar like to the whole point of if you're charging $5,000-$6,000 for certain things, but not understanding basic accounting concepts. So I always tell people this when they ask me if I regret going to college, because I never graduated. I dropped out like my third or like beginning of my fourth year. And I was going to school for business administration. And I think it was with an emphasis in logistics. And I was switching that to marketing because it turned out I liked marketing more. And I was working at a marketing agency at the time. But people ask me if I were to go back and do it again, what would I, if I would go to college, what would I go to school for? And I even tell this to people who are going to school for marketing, like they want to open up their own agency or whatever. I always say, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to own your own business and you're in college, get a degree in accounting. Because if you have like the natural ability to produce certain service already and you're good at that, what you do need to learn is good accounting principles. Because accounting is the backbone of your business. Everything that we do at Evergrow has some form of accounting involved, of where the money is going, how it's being forecasted, and then also just like what our plans are for the near future. It's all money driven. And it also really impresses clients too. When you start working with bigger clients, especially if you're charging like $6,000 a month or even like $2,000 a month for your basic management without ads. If your clients can afford that, they're probably relatively big in business, which means they have their own internal accounting department. So they're going to want to know certain things. Like one is every January, we have like 5 out of our 70 clients that ask us for our W-9 because they're big enough to have an accounting department that recognizes they need this. And so the W-9, I could be getting this wrong, but it's basically a form saying that you paid for a contractor and like we're contractors. Is that right?
I'm not even going to double check. more and more clients, because they've gotten bigger, have asked us for number W-9s, which is a legal document that's needed for accounting. So we have it prepared. We should at this point probably be sending it out proactively and just haven't created a easy process for it yet. So
nothing changes on it. The only thing that's on W-9 is our information. I think it's our employer identification number. It's our name, our address, just that information. And we just give it to them and then they give it to their accountant and their accountant is like, oh yes, this is the actual legal entity that you've been paying X number of dollars a month to.
Yep. This is another one of those things when you grow fast and you're like, oh yeah, okay, that's a new thing. I've achieved this level and now this is something for me to know and do correctly.
Well, it's also why we outsource our accounting too, because we did it for like the first few months and we're like, we need to find an accountant. So when we first got asked this, we went to our accountant and we're like, hey, they asked for a W-9. Can you help us? And then he just like sent it over and then we're like, okay, cool. We'll save this and just send it out. But a really cool example that I had was we just built a really big website for, I guess not a big website, but we just built a website for a really big client who has like 7 locations all through an entire state and into another state. And it's like our first client to where we actually have to charge them an additional management fee for each subsequent location they have because of the amount of work that it has. So their base management fee is 4 times higher than a normal client on ours. And we just finished the website build. So when we do that, we usually charge them the remaining. So this goes back to like 2 episodes ago, but the way that we bill, when we build a website, we bill 50% of it up front, we build it out. And at the end of that website building period, we bill the remaining 50%. And then at the same time, we usually add on the following month's marketing invoices or line items as well. So it's usually a bigger invoice. And Cody, I don't think I've told you this, but I actually separated those out this time.
Yeah, you told me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the reason why I separated those out, and I told the client this, and I said, hey, I'm going to separate these invoices out. So you're going to have the closing out of your website build, which was like a $7,000 website. And then you're going to have your marketing invoice for March totally separated. And the reason why we're doing this is because if you haven't already, you can take your website and you can put it on the P&Ls as an operating, or on the balance sheet as put on the balance sheet as a capital expense. And there's all kinds of accounting wizardry that goes into the capital expenses, but basically they can depreciate that over the course of amount of years, and also just take that or reduce their taxable income differently than how they would for like a marketing service that's executed in 1 month. So that was something that I learned at working for other agencies. But I would assume that things like that would probably be asked for in our future. So with something that big, yeah, I'd send it out as a separate invoice so they can mark it as a capital expense and depreciate it over time. And I think just knowing some of those concepts is really important for growing your business, or, you know, establishing an actual legitimate business rather than just being a business bro, a boss babe, a entrepreneur, a guru. These are important. And
yeah, I noticed that when we wrote down our notes, yours were a lot more like operational, and making sure that you're running a legitimate operation. And mine were more the issues I've had interactionally, people that have like turned me off, to them, how they're conducting business and seeing how they would have troubles even getting clients and that sort of thing too. So
that's probably the direction we should have took it. it's interesting that I did that and you did that, because that we like shifted, we like changed
seats. Yeah, changed roles.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just kind of want to scare people a little bit, just being like, you can do what you're doing for a while. You can be that freelancer who's collecting $10K a month and you know, be that person. But one is, you're probably going to have really high employee or client churn. And then two, you're not going to make it much further past that.
Yeah, I think, and I don't do it, we don't do it, we haven't done it. I don't think it's hard. I don't think we would have a hard time doing things wrong short term. making a lot of money relatively quickly, and disregarding the long-term consequences and seeing the crash and burn and then coming back later and being like, oh yeah, we learned a lot, didn't we? Right.
We had that listener reached out to us and was like, I did the whole scaling the agency too fast and it blew up and now I'm doing it right again.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe for some people it's worth it. But I just told Jenny this last night. I have a very low tolerance for the middle ground, like the frustrating spot of where things are either they're not yet determined, and you're working towards the ideal, but just like that stuck spot. I hate being there. I suck at it. I'm very bad at it. I'm angry at everything around me. I hate everything all the time. And
it's about where we're at right now.
A little. It's like where we're at right now is less than ideal, but not quite what I'm going for, which is like so for example, with that, where you know that you're building something that, well, if you know, if you don't know, that's different. If you think that you're building something great and then you find out later that you have the problems, but let's say that, you know that you're building something with, say, for example, the $2,000 a month retainer, and you can't deliver what you need with how much money that you're asking for, then you have the inevitable fights and conversations with clients that are going to come in the future. Like that, to me, knowing that you're working towards that and knowing that it's not going to be a good place, I'm already out, right? I'm not even going to partake. I'm not even going to do that because I know that it's not worth it. A lot of those things that are in that same idea, that same vein, not worth it, right? It's the same world as, hey, this is a trouble client, but it's worth the money. Nobody says that, right? There's not a single person who is responsible for delivering the work to, right? If you're a major, like a huge company, and then you're part of sales, and somebody else is doing the delivery, and you're not actually responsible for the work and that sort of stuff, like maybe in those cases you'll think that. But 9 times out of 10, I've yet to meet a agency owner who said yes to a client that they had early signs that was going to be a problem. And then I've never met someone say, oh yeah. And then they turned out they were just wonderful and great, and everything went in the perfectly great direction, right? It's always the, if you have a gut feeling that's bad, or if you have early signs that things aren't good, don't say yes, right?
Okay, well, I have a devil's advocate because you've been wrong on this.
Okay.
I won't name names, but all I'm going to say is one of our clients that you had bad feelings about early on turned out to be very good for our business. Mm-hmm. So you have.
I'm also not in charge of acquisition, and there's a reason for that.
That's why when I left for Jamaica, Lauren was just like, "Cody's not going to talk to anybody, is he?"
Yeah,
he's just going to be like, "Nope, sorry."
So I can say that too, though, is I know that about myself, and that I can't be trusted with some of that because, yeah, I'd say no too much. So I leave it to Jake.
Say yes too much.
Well, don't say that. We're just going with what you think.
But no, this is where like the dichotomy of our relationship kind of meets, is that I say yes too much, you say no too much, and then we kind of meet in the middle.
So how it plays out in practice is the overwhelming majority of the time, I think what you say is good and right, and how you choose with clients is,
yeah, it's
once you're like, I know. Once
my business card says CEO. Okay.
Once I start seeing on my end that like you're getting abused somehow emotionally or like verbally, I'm like, whoa, Jake, what happened? How did we get here?
My protector Cody comes in.
Says, so I come in and I talk to him, and I'm like, what's going on, guys? If I have to talk to the client and do that sort of thing. But yeah, it creates the issue itself because, you know, you're the primary communicator with the client. I only do when I have to. Once I get more involved and you start getting less involved, that almost right there is a sign by itself. Because if you're like, man, I'm dreading this, right? and I'm like, okay, yeah, like I can tag in. And then because my social battery is a zero, I'd say like it's playing a game on your phone. When I talk to clients, I go from like 100 to zero in like half an hour. Like, well, that was great. One call today. We can call it good there. But when they're especially difficult, and then I can tell like, man, this has to be really draining for Jake. That's when we can, you know, relatively quickly determine whether something, I don't know if saying it was a bad decision or just saying, hey, we've gotten to a bad place with this and we need to get it back to a good place.
Well, it happened in Jamaica where we had that client who was kind of being unreasonable. And then I came in hot and was like, listen here, like you're being absolutely ridiculous. This needs to stop. And then you messaged me and you're like, that was risky.
But you also know, right? Like you, that's your area of expertise and you know when to play those cards.
Yeah. It wasn't, it's not a card I like to play, but I was prepared to lose your client after that. Cause it was kind of like you're reminding me of somebody in 2021.
Yep.
We're getting to the end of the episode, but I actually wanted to mention this like relatively first, because it probably would have steered the direction of this episode in kind of a more superficial direction, which is where we originally wanted it to go versus like operational. But the other thing, the whole kind of impetus of the reason why Cody and I started this episode is because when we were planning for it, I had mentioned something that actually annoyed me that I see in social media a lot. And I had just saw it this morning and I was going to comment on it, but I would have broke my my social media hiatus record. So I haven't been commenting on social stuff at all lately. And I've just been letting the kind of the podcast go on autopilot. But someone posted, hey, I need somebody to help me close my first client willing to pay 20% commission. And I thought that was just absolutely ridiculous and it made me mad. And so I thought it was ridiculous for a couple of reasons. The first one is because you shouldn't be paying somebody or having somebody get you your first client. That should be up to you. And if you need to be handed your first client, you shouldn't be in business. Not even own an agency. You just shouldn't be in business. Now, there's a difference. I feel like Cody is playing devil's advocate in his head already. There's a difference between having the opportunity of having one handed to you and needing it. You need to put in the work to get your first client. And this like goes in line with like one of the very first points that we brought up in this episode, which is align the expectations of the product that you have to the delivery of it. And then two, find the right clients for it. You're not just trying to get a client for the sake of getting a client. You've got to put in the work to get who is right for you. The second thing that was super annoying is that when you do this, I don't know how people don't see this, but when you don't close your own clients and you don't talk to your own prospects, you turn into clients, the most important relationship builder in a client vendor relationship is the first interaction. And like, I guess it's really like the first few, like the first, you know, number one is obviously the most that has to happen. It has to be you. And then it has to be, you know, the few after that. And even when you look at getting onboarded in like a SaaS company, like let's say you sign up for HubSpot, you have a HubSpot rep that you talk to multiple times and then you never talk to them again. They might check in with you like once a year, but what you do is you get connected with like a technical support person that you start to build that relationship with, but you can go back to that the sales guy, even though he's not really who is facilitating this. Cody and I recently went through home buying processes. Well, mine was a year and a half ago, but Cody's going through selling his house now after flipping it. And when you work with a loan officer, that loan officer is like your best friend for like a week. And then you get turned over to the underwriters, and those people suck. And so a lot of the times when you're dealing with the underwriters, you have a lot of frustrations and you end up going back to the loan officer, but it's not the loan officer's job to facilitate the relationship. Although they will, because they're the first person who reached out to you and closed you on the sale. And that ultimately is better for the business. If that loan officer wasn't communicating with me when I was frustrated with the underwriters, I would be raising hell with my mortgage company. But I liked him and he was great. Same thing applies for your customers or your clients. If you have somebody else close them for you and then you facilitate the work, either whether it's you doing it or whether it's you're contracting somebody. And I just feel like 100% of these people who are asking for people to close clients for them are also outsourcing the labor too. And if you do that, you should not be in business. I like, you're not going to last. But if you are doing it, if you are facilitating the work and you just need people to get you clients, this is a warning. Those clients will not stay with you for very long because you have not developed the original relationship with them. That is, and my rule of thumb for that is you shouldn't be doing it before $1 million in revenue. And it sounds like this is just like a very, like, I'm sure someone in 2 million or 3 million or 4 million would be like, well, it should be higher than a million. But because we're not a million yet, I don't expect myself to be out of the relationship process until we hit that number. At least start considering being out of that process. We're at 500,000 now, and I don't even feel like I'm close to being able to exit that process.
Okay. These are weird. You're saying I can play devil's advocate, but here's what this all comes down to for me when I hear some of these things, right? When I hear some of this stuff, I think this is weird and it's not how business actually is. This is, once again, the disconnect between internet talk and real operations. If all you do is spend time on the internet and you don't go touch grass and you don't talk to real people in business and have real relationships and that sort of thing with them, it seems like by default, people always assume the worst, or they're operating on the worst. So for example, saying, hey, somebody give me my first client, I'll give you 20%. If I like you, I'll just give you a client that's not a good fit for us anyway. I don't care about your money, right? Money's important in business and you'll get it, but something like that, I don't care. If you are a good person, you're trying hard and you're doing well and we can tell that this is cut out for you, like, we have no problem when someone who isn't a good fit for us trying to refer, because we just want to help people in general. If a client comes to us and it's not a good match for whatever reason, we still want to, it would be nice to be able to recommend to them to a place that's a good fit. So for example, one that will happen very frequently across the board, I'm not saying us, but so you get an inquiry from a client who doesn't have the budget for you. So it's under what you're demanding or requiring, but you don't have a cheaper option that you want to recommend to. Well, that's the perfect example for somebody who's just starting out, right? And if they seem like they want to try hard, they want to work hard, then we can say, look, we know these people, they're just trying out. We can't guarantee or promise anything, but they're at least worth talking to. If we do that, we don't care about 20%, right? Why? What's it going to do for us?
Yeah.
So when you talk to people in business and you actually build relationships with them and can call them friends instead of just this person I know, that's how it actually plays out. And I think when you operate the other way and you're just always assuming the worst in other people, I think that's one of the worst mistakes that you can make as the bad business bro personality, is always assuming and operating as if the other person is going to do the bad thing or the worst thing or only has their own interests at heart. And you should consider those things. I'm not saying don't think about them, because this world isn't this flowery place where everything's wonderful.
Are you talking about things like when people say, like, why would you give your client access to the ad account? They can just steal it. Like, they can right. steal all the information. Like, yeah, you're assuming the worst in them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's not, we've never had that happen. We had one client take what we were doing and run with it himself because he liked doing digital marketing, but I'm still friends with that client, and he promotes us every day in groups.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to get more examples. Fighting for the cheapest labor, right? Or assuming that everybody's fighting for the cheapest labor. So like, why would I pay, you know, or not? Honestly, if that's the kind of person, I hope you're not listening. If you're like, why would I pay somebody more when I can pay them less? If, you know, I can get cheaper labor here because, you know, it's possible. Well, maybe they suck, right?
I want to do an episode on like the objections I get from a sales perspective, because I don't get a lot of objections because everything that we do is inbound, but I do get objections. Like, one of them is, why would I go with you when I could go with this person who's less? Then it's so easy to shut down. I don't even have to say anything about them or about me. I would just say, why does one of your clients go with you when they could pay the neighbor kid 20 bucks down the street? And then they're just like, oh, all right, I see your point.
Yeah. I think when you think that way, when you operate from that perspective, that mentality of even saying that, and I am saying, I think if we have clients who come to us and that's the kind of stuff that they're saying, that's way more indicative of them and who they are and their upbringing and their background than anything else, if that's where your mind goes to. Because it is not, once you're emotionally normal and happy and healthy, you're dying. Your default response when these things come up is not, well, these people are selfish and they're going to do the absolute most that they can for themselves and absolute minimum for anybody else, right? Partly because that's, I mean, nobody's actually, well, okay, some people, again, that's indicative of where you come from. Being that selfish is strange. And also because it doesn't even work in business in the long term. This is the mutually beneficial, mutually profitable thing that we talk about too. The best relationships that you can find are going to be the ones that benefit each other. And if you're constantly fighting each other on that, that's, so let's talk about the house thing, like selling a house. Some people, you have the people who are like, real estate agents suck, or realtors, I hate them, they take too much money. Look, if you just look at the relationship itself, a real estate agent wants to sell your house for as much as possible because then they make more money. So there might be some out there who suck and are going to do the absolute minimum and sell it for as little as possible because they just wanted to spend as little as time as possible. But you also have the people who are like, yes, I want to make you as much money as possible because I make as much money as possible. That's a mutually beneficial thing. And I think that is a much better business perspective to run off of instead of assuming they're crooks. They're going to take they're going to do as little as possible and take as much money as from me as possible. When you operate in a mentally healthier place, that shows a lot of growth. Am I making sense? Am I like conveying this correctly?
No, you are. I mean, this really goes into like, it's we're getting into the sales objection episode, which may be the next one we do, but like, it kind of goes into when clients come to me and say, I want to rank well. And I say, why? Like, why do you care about rank? Because they think you'll get them more leads. They want more leads. Okay, so you want more leads then. And then we tell them, like, I want to give you more leads too. Because when you close leads, you make money. When you make money, you grow. When you grow, we grow. And it's the same thing. It's just that it's that mutually beneficial relationship. But sometimes the terminology is misaligned. And making sure that when you start a relationship with a client, your terminology and your expectations are aligned. And that's what a healthy relationship is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I tell clients all the time, like, they say things like, would you advise keeping my marketing? Because we're month to month, so we don't lock people into contracts, which means they can in the winter shut marketing off and not pay anything until January or spring. And that's sometimes that's what people do. And so when they ask me, when they onboard with me, like, what do you think I should do? Do you think I should keep them on? I literally always start with, well, if you ask me, I'm going to say yes, because then I get money. And mm-hmm. like it always gets a chuckle. But then I say, but honestly, like, this is why I say yes. However, you should also look at it from a cash flow perspective. And I play the devil's advocate for them. And 9 times out of 10, when I explain it to them, they keep it on.
Yep.
So that went a lot longer than I thought it did.
Yeah.
That's what she said. You got to chime in sometimes, man. I feel like I'm alone.
Really?
Yeah, you got to say that's what she said.
Oh, it's just not my joke. I don't know. It's not my go-to.
It's not my joke either.
It is. You say it. So it makes it your joke.
Okay. I'm going to start applying that logic to quotes. I'm like, this is my quote.
Right. Maybe I'll go back on that.
I think that's everything I have. I don't have anything else. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, everybody. Well, hope you find value in this one. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.